The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Well, if you read or watch any of the news coming from the mainstream, you're not going to find much of anything positive about Donald Trump. I've mentioned before this statistic, 90% negative coverage since he came into office, even before coming into office. Even former President Jimmy Carter told the New York Times, this is a direct quote, I think the media have been harder on Trump than any other president, certainly that I've known about. That's from 93-year-old Jimmy Carter. He's never seen anything like it. They've been harder on Trump than any other president. And yet, you know, if you scratch beneath the surface some, you'll see quite a few good things that are actually happening in the United States. It's just not something that's reported. Victor Davis Hanson had a piece yesterday where he said, on the domestic and foreign fronts, the Trump administration has prompted economic growth and restored U.S. deterrence. The U.S. is making some progress in places like Syria, North Korea. We'll talk more about this in just a bit. But Hansen says here, polls show increased consumer confidence. And in some, Trump himself has gained ground. There was a Gallup poll just a couple days ago that said in his second year now that the president's approval rating is at 37%, which is right where it was for Barack Obama in his second year. Back in 2010, I guess it would be. It's just 1 point lower than Bill Clinton's approval rate in the second year of his presidency. But you'd never know it. I mean, they're all right at the same level. George W. Bush's was even higher. I mean, he was riding a wave of support following 9/11 early on in his presidency. But 37% is about the average. And here's President Trump right at that same level. All of these Democrat media members, they've been so hopeful in their reporting of the coming landslide, the way they see it, in the midterm elections for the Democrat Party. But what if that doesn't happen? What if the Republicans hold steady? What if President Trump gains popularity? I mean, from his side, he certainly can trumpet a lot of positive developments, and a lot of Americans, particularly with respect to the economy, can step up and speak on his behalf to the success of some of these programs. Just in the past couple of days, he's had this first official state visit with the French president, Emmanuel Macron. And both of them are toasting what they call a great relationship. Lots of affection. The Sky News piece from today says their speeches, they spoke yesterday, their speeches followed a day of public affection with the two leaders kissing each other on the cheek, embracing for extended periods, and Mr. Trump appearing to brush dandruff off Mr. Macron's blazer before calling him perfect. It says the French president's trip was the first official state visit of Mr. Trump's administration, one the U.S. president said marked a beautiful friendship forged in revolution that had changed the course of history. He talked about that history in his address yesterday before the president of France, the president and his wife. Here's just a little bit from that speech that President Trump gave. This is clip 10.
Our two great republics are linked together by the timeless bonds of history, culture, and destiny. We are people who cherish our values, protect our civilization, and recognize the image of God in every human soul. This legacy has made us who we are and given us what we hold dear, the blessings of faith and freedom, the marvels of art and science, the love of family and community, and the defense of home and country. This righteous calling, this sacred heritage, is what moved a young Frenchman to risk death for American liberty at Yorktown. It is what spurred the Americans to storm the cliffs of Omaha Beach. It is what drove the farmers of Massachusetts to stand at Concord Bridge and the citizens of Paris to man the barricades. And just weeks ago, we added a new name to this chronicle of our great heroes, a brave French policeman named Arnaud Beltram. Colonel Beltram stared down evil and did not flinch. He laid down his life for his neighbors, for his country, and for civilization itself. A great man.
If you happen to see the footage of that particular speech or that moment in the speech there at the end where he called Colonel Beltram a great man, President Macron reached over and grabbed President Trump's left arm, and the two of them looked at each other appreciatively. He was grateful for what he said there about this most recent hero, the chronicle of our great heroes. CNN, when covering this historic visit, the first official state visit of the Trump administration, welcoming in the leader of France. Just listen to the way that this is covered. This is coming from the news network that plays in airports all across America. This is the network that has traditionally been seen as, you know, the middle of the road. CNN says Donald Trump is not the only president who wants to make his country great again. His first state dinner guest, Emmanuel Macron, wants to do the same. That's why the young, pragmatic French president is giving the impression that there's nothing he'd rather do than spend time with his scandal-plagued U.S. counterpart, offering him the respect and validation that he craves. That's the opening. He's just giving the impression that he's happy to be here. There's nothing sincere about it. I mean, how could it be sincere? How could anyone like Trump? That's the tone here. That's the underlying message. Not from a commentary piece or an editorial piece. This is CNN. Macron's faking it. I mean, really, this report, if you can even call it that, it reads like a parody of CNN. It says, but he's not acting purely out of the goodness of his heart. To fulfill his goal of restoring France's prestige and global influence, he needs the United States. And that means there is no choice but to deal with the man in the Oval Office. Well, he has no choice, you see. He's in a bind. He needs President Trump. It says, and it explains why Macron, who greeted Trump with an air kiss on his cheek as he arrived for his state visit to the White House, has gone out of his way to be friendly to Trump, who is as unpopular in France as he is in the rest of Europe. Can you believe this? This is CNN just reporting on an official state visit. That's all that it was. Goodwill on both sides, inspiring speeches. Two wealthy and powerful nations in this world. And here is CNN's take. Macron is making clear that the scandals affecting the White House and even questions about whether they will truncate Trump's presidency have no effect on how he will approach the U.S. president. This is CNN writing about a visit between the French president and the U.S. president. and it can't help itself. This is a presidency, just so you know, that might be truncated. His presidency could be cut short because of these scandals. That's included in the news coverage of Mr. Macron's visit to the White House. Well, the article at least quotes what Macron himself said on Sunday. He said, "I'm here to deal with the President of the United States, and the people of the United States elected Donald Trump." I mean, he's more fair-minded about it than the CNN people. "I'm here to deal with the President and the people who elected him." CNN, though, says, "Such an unequivocal embrace must be music to the ears of Trump, who often behaves like he thinks that the legitimacy of his election is being undermined." You think? Do you think he can possibly think his election is being undermined? Well, look at this kind of coverage. It is being undermined. Constantly. It's nonstop, and we're going to talk more about this in the next segment. CNN says, "But Macron's warmth leaves Trump with a dilemma. If he really values Macron and is interested in repaying his friendship, Trump may be forced to pay a political price himself. Does the recognition he gains from Macron justify compromises on positions that are indigenous to his own beliefs and appeal to his most loyal voters, but are fundamentally opposed by America's closest European allies?" Is he going to go forward with some of these discussions and agreements, whatever it is that he reaches with France? He's just doing this to, well, he's craving the attention, you see. As I say, this is the news network that's everywhere across America. If you travel at all, you're familiar with CNN and the airports. And it's just one of many examples, as we've been noting over the last couple of weeks. One of many. Trump can do no right in their eyes. 90% negative, the coverage. President Carter himself, I think the media have been harder on Trump than any other president, certainly that I've known about. And yet if you push some of this bias aside, and really it's beyond bias, I mean, this is some kind of derangement. But if you push it aside, here again, there are a few reports, if you're willing to go look for them, about the economy that's really picking up, the stock market gaining 31% over the past year. That's additional stock market wealth of $5.5 trillion. Over the past year, President Trump, the Trump administration, has added 2.2 million jobs to the economy. Unemployment has dropped from 4.8% to 4.1%. And among minority groups, you would think the press would be sounding the alarm on this. Or not the alarm necessarily, but at least blasting this onto the front pages. This is good news for minorities. Record low unemployment. Whether for Hispanics, African Americans, Asians, it's never been lower. At least not since 1972 when they first started keeping records. And yet they're not gonna have anything to say about this because, well, I mean, it's obvious President Trump's a racist. He's not helping the blacks, he's not helping the Hispanics, he's hurting them. That's just the storyline. That's just the conventional wisdom that we want for you to stay with. That's the narrative that we've created. And nothing can change our view. And so it's no wonder that he takes to Twitter. It's no wonder that at the start of cabinet meetings with all the press in attendance, it's no wonder that during pressers, he speaks up talking about these positive statistics. He did it again yesterday ahead of his cabinet meeting. This is clip number one.
Very good numbers are coming out on our businesses. You're seeing the numbers that are getting released on our companies and our businesses. They're very strong. The economy is been really incredible. Unemployment now is at the lowest point ever in history in many, many states. The states were enumerated late last night, the numbers came out. And we've hit the lowest unemployment numbers in many decades in some cases, and in some cases, the lowest numbers, period. It was just reiterated that unemployment for African American families, it's been the best in history. For Hispanic families, the best in history. For women, the best in 18 years, and that's very close to going much higher than that. So it's really something very special. So we're very happy about that.
They're happy about it, but no one else is. In the media, they just don't talk about it. They don't talk about the impact, the immediate impact, even after just announcing that the tax cuts, or when the tax cuts were voted on a few months ago, and all of those corporations announcing right away, AT&T, Apple, Visa, Walmart, they were going to be doling out bonuses, bigger bonuses, because it was going to increase their revenue. The confidence index, the economic optimism index, as it's called, it's at 55%, 55.1, well above the 49.3 average. So confidence, optimism, it's on the up and up. USA Today recently said that the consumer confidence is at the highest level it's been in 17 years. And then all the regulations that this administration has eliminated, here again, helping businesses, small businesses. He's eliminating 22 regulations for every one that he adds. And this is saving companies billions. There was a piece at International Business Daily from March 13th, a little over a month ago, that just went right through all of these regulations that the Trump administration has removed. It quotes this director of economic research as saying, "It's amazing to see how much the president has done. To see so far this year how much the president has done," it says. "The growth rate in regulation has certainly slowed under Trump, and it has slowed more than we've seen for other presidents in their first year." It says further on in the piece, "Deregulation is probably a major driver of the post-election stock market rally." I mean, Obama was adding regulations by the thousands every year. I mean, the last year of his administration, it all totaled up to 95,000 pages worth. The USA Today, it had a piece in December, a few months back. "Economic growth, the gross domestic product has grown by more than 3% for two quarters in a row." CNS News, "Trump hails lower number of people forced to use food stamps. They've knocked 1.9 million people off of food stamps." You remember all the stories during Obama's years. They were adding people to the food stamp rolls by the millions every year. Every year, people on food stamps. That's now being reduced. He's repealed certain components of Obamacare. Abroad, of course, he's had a hand in squashing ISIS and pushing back against Assad in Syria. He's ramped up military spending. Of course, that's at great cost because of the ever-bloated $1.3 trillion budget. But still, there's some positive takeaways here if the press cares to look into it. If the press cares to report upon it. Syria, as I mentioned, National Review, it had a piece again a few weeks back. talking about what was left in Trump's lap. Of course, referring to the complete botch the Obama administration made of Syria. National Review said, with Obama's missteps, one is right to ask what Trump has done since he's taken office. To start, he has loosed the rules of engagement to allow our troops to be less constrained when combating radical Islamist terrorist groups. Obama wanted to tie their hands behind their back. Trump has come along and loosened those rules of engagement. It says ISIS remains on the run in both Syria and Iraq and has lost more than 98% of its territory. Of course, we know where this is leading prophetically. It's not like it's fixing any of the long-standing problems in the region. I mean, if anything, it's just going to allow for Iran to emerge as that prophesied king of the South. But as this article brings out, I mean, they're Iran and Russia, they're both backpedaling some just because of America's show of force. I mean, it was their neighborhood, basically, those last several years of Obama's presidency. National Review says, in a recent major escalation, United States forces killed or wounded more than 300 Kremlin-backed guns for hire near the city of Deir al-Zor in Syria. Assailants attempted to launch an assault on an American base and were obliterated in a clash more deadly than any single occasion during the Cold War. Trump offered no apologies or condolences to Putin after it was revealed that dozens of fighters were Russian citizens fighting under the guise of mercenaries. This is the one who supposedly is colluding with Putin and Russia, fighting back in Syria. It says, most significantly, the Trump administration has stood firm in its stance that the use of chemical weapons is unacceptable. Obama said it, but didn't do anything about it when they were used. It says here, emboldened by Obama's feeble response, Assad launched a chemical attack on the Syrian city of Khan Shakun in April 2017. More than 80 were killed, with hundreds injured, including women and children. It says the United States responded immediately, launching 59 Tomahawk missiles, wiping out approximately 20% of the Assad regime's air power. Just took out an airbase, a Syrian airbase. It's only 16 months in. There's a few positive things to note. Here recently, of course, the dialogue with North Korea. I mean, what a stunning turn this has been, particularly when you consider how the relationship started. I mean, going back to the beginning of his presidency, Trump was... Well, North Korea was threatening to nuke the United States. And Trump made fun of the dictator and promised fire and fury in return. He made the sanctions tougher and has since convinced China to apply more pressure on Kim Jong-un. And now look at what's happening. And again, going back to Syria, the same point we made about Syria. I mean, look at what he was left with. In February, Trump came out and said, look, the previous administrations, the previous two in particular, they didn't do anything. The Bush administration did nothing. The Obama administration wanted to do something, the president said, but he didn't do anything. And so here it's left for President Trump to deal with. And now, I mean, now, wouldn't you know, just in the last month or two, here comes North Korea agreeing to meet with South Korea for these historic talks, even talks that might include denuclearization. How would the press be handling this, these developments, if President Obama was still in office? Kim Jong-un has agreed to meet with President Trump. The media just reported a few days ago that North Korea would close its nuclear testing facility and suspend, this is from CNBC, and suspend nuclear and intercontinental ballistic missile tests, a move welcomed by Trump as big progress. This is the official announcement coming from the North Korea state-run media. It says, with the understanding that the suspension of nuclear tests is an important step towards worldwide nuclear disarmament, we will join the international mission and efforts to stop all nuclear tests. Now, again, this is not going to bring peace to the world. We know what's prophesied. We know great tribulation is coming. But still, what would the coverage be like in the American press if this was Obama leading the way? Now, that announcement I just read to you, it stops short of saying that North Korea would get rid of the nukes that they now have. But what a statement. What a statement. President Obama, he won the Nobel Peace Prize because he talked about denuclearization. You remember the history. He came into office, and it was because he was a good speaker. He didn't do anything about it. But he won the award just strictly because he was a good speaker. He spoke eloquently about world peace, about a world without nukes. And here's some actual progress that's moving in that direction, at least with the little nation of North Korea. This little nation that's a threat to all of its neighbors, to even the United States now. Nothing, though. Nothing positive to report. Because the Trump presidency is about to be truncated, as CNN says. Doesn't Mr. Macron know this? I mean, then Trump, he goes around as if there's some kind of attempt or effort to undermine his presidency. Well, there is. There is. Victor Davis Hanson, just going back to this piece I quoted at the start, it says, on the domestic fronts, the Trump administration has prompted economic growth and restored U.S. deterrence. Polls show increased consumer confidence, and in some, Trump himself has gained ground. Yet, good news is bad news to the resistance and its strange continued efforts to stop an elected president in a way it failed to do in the 2016 election. And the rest of Mr. Hansen's article is quite sobering. And we'll come to that in the next segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Mr. recently.
And what about, Mr. President, what about Michael Cohen? Are you considering
thank you very much. Stupid question. Go ahead. Any other, anybody else, please?
That's President Trump, obviously, in his press conference, his joint press conference yesterday with French President Emmanuel Macron and ABC's Jonathan Carl speaking up to ask about the personal lawyer, the private lawyer that he had, you know, the one that had his house and his office and his hotel room and his safety deposit box raided, the one that had his phones and computers taken. And he says, what about Michael Cohen? Are you considering a pardon? Are you going to pardon him? He's already guilty, you see. Are you going to pardon him? And the president of the United States, as you heard, dismissed the question and said it's, well, that's a stupid question. Jonathan Carl, by the way, of ABC, he was the one in that exchange I played for you on Monday, the roundtable of radical leftist journalists, that discussion they had with George Stephanopoulos. Remember where Stephanopoulos was talking about how, really, as we look back, it wasn't really fair to talk about the problems of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump equally. It wasn't really fair to do that. And then Carl, who speaks up in this clip that we'll replay for you here in just a second, he talked about, well, hey, we needed to go harder after Trump. And he's the one that said, you know, we didn't get around to the investigative reporting until, frankly, until it was too late. It was too late to try to take him down. That's what he's saying. Here's that discussion from Sunday. This is clip three.
Listen, you look back and say, listen, there were things done wrong with emails. There's no question about that. But there's something structurally in the media where we have to equalize everything. If you point out a wrongdoing on one side, you have to point out a wrongdoing on the other, and they automatically become equivalent, and that isn't always fair.
Well, and I think the problem, though, might have been not enough equalization. I don't think it's a problem of how much we covered or how much the press covered the emails. How much investigative work was there done on Donald Trump, particularly during the primary?
Not enough.
He was portrayed more as a phenomenon, the excitement, the attacks, the latest, you know, outrageous thing he said or whatever. There wasn't much investigative reporting going, frankly, until it was too late.
That's Jonathan Carl there at the end. ABC's Jonathan Carl saying that NBC's Donald Trump, Trump worked for NBC 14 years, the Manhattan billionaire, real estate properties all over the world, that we really didn't investigate him. We really didn't know him. Stephanopoulos, remember in the other clip I played Monday, said, yeah, Hillary was known, but implying that Donald Trump wasn't known. Donald Trump was the most known presidential candidate in history. That's the truth. But here they come out now and say, you know, really, we didn't do our job. We didn't go after him hard enough. We didn't start to really get into the investigative stuff until after it was too late. And so there's no let up now. In their minds, they thought it was equal, fair, and balanced during the election process or leading up to it. And now they see, well, look, it's got to be a little bit unbalanced here because we have to go after him. I mean, look at the tone of that CNN coverage of a simple state visit. That's what it was. The president of one country along with his wife and the president of another country along with his wife getting together and talking about relations, whether it's for trade or the economy, whatever it is. And CNN's take, well, I don't need to repeat myself. It's astonishing. The derangement that's setting in. And Victor Davis Hanson, he lays it out like a good historian. He lays it out. Good news is bad news to the resistance. They won't report any of the good news. Or if they do, they make it bad news. Here's an official state visit. Indeed, it says, the aim of the so-called resistance to Donald J. Trump is ending Trump's presidency by any means necessary before the 2020 election. That's the goal. And the CNN reporter that's commenting on the first state visit, he can't help himself to talk about a presidency that he hopes will be truncated. It says, or barring that, it seeks to so delegitimize him that he becomes presidentially impotent. Hansen says it's been only 16 months since Trump took office, and in the spirit of revolutionary fervor, almost everything has been tried to derail him. Now, we're entering into uncharted territory, a time when otherwise the country is improving and the legal exposure of Trump's opponents increases daily. It's like we've been covering on this program. I mean, the real evidence that's turning up shows just how corrupt the Obama administration was, and the DOJ, and the FBI. But see, the media, they're right in lockstep with this radical leftist attempt to take over. Just as my father's been talking about since 2013, early in 2013, America under attack, 16 months, and they have tried everything, and they're not finished. There have been the lawsuits. There was the congressional boycott of the inauguration, all the protests on the first day of the presidency. You remember. Then the attempt to introduce articles of impeachment. They've already tried to do that. And they'll bring it up again if they get a few more Democrats in the midterm elections. They've brought forward, this is all in the major media, they've brought forward the specialists, the psychologists, to question whether or not Donald Trump is mentally fit. We know that he's morally unfit. Comey's pointed that out last week. But there have been quite a few on major news networks questioning his mental stability, Donald Trump's. And then you have all the leaks. You have the outright defiance from some of those holdovers like Sally Yates, just refusing to carry out the new president's orders. That's all. You've got to do it. I mean, we're part of the resistance. And the goal here, the aim, is to truncate this presidency, to end this presidency early, any means necessary. Hansen says, as the resistance goes from one ploy to the next, it ignores its string of failed prior efforts, forgetting everything and learning nothing. It says further on, anti- and never-Trump op-ed writers have long ago run out of superlatives. Trump is the worst, most, biggest, fill-in-the-blank, in the history of the presidency, in the history of the world. Worse even than Mao, Mussolini, Stalin, or Hitler. He talks about the Fire and Fury book from last year, Michael Wolff's Hearsay, as he puts it. And then Jim Comey, all the leaked information, the memos. He lies to Congress. He misleads the FISA courts. He admitted last week that he based the handling, as Hansen brings out in his piece, he based the handling of the email investigation, Hillary Clinton investigation, he based that on the assumption that she would win the presidency. He admitted that last week. Hansen writes here, Robert Mueller and his dream team were long ago supposed to have discovered proof of Trump's collusion with Russia. A year later, they found nothing much to do with this mandate. Then the alternative sent was obstruction of justice. Then the chase took another detour to follow some sort of fraud or racketeering. Now the FBI is reduced to raiding Trump's lawyer in an effort to root out the real story on Stormy Daniels. And then Jonathan Carl speaks up yesterday. Well, what about Cohen? What about this lawyer whose offices have been raided by the FBI? Are you going to pardon him? And the president just dismisses the question. This is where we are. Hansen says one wonders what might have happened to Michael Cohen, or what might have happened had Michael Cohen panicked and destroyed 30,000 emails before Mueller seized his computers. That's what happened, of course, with Hillary Clinton's server and computers. No matter, it says, Mueller's legal army presses on, even as it leaves its own wounded on the battlefield, as resignations, reassignments, and retirements for improper conduct decimate the Obama-era FBI and DOJ hierarchies. See, it's just like my father said in that most recent article. It's now about the radical left, saving America from the radical left temporarily. That's the feature in the latest print edition. And I know I've plugged it probably now a couple hundred times, but still, it's worth noting. Make sure you read it in that new issue of the Trumpet magazine. All of this corruption from the Obama era FBI and DOJ. And look at what they've been saying out in the public sphere and how the stories keep changing. And then just the contempt that they have for Donald Trump, John Brennan, James Clapper, Michael Hayden, James Comey. Hansen says here in his article, if you look back over the past year, just the celebrities, the late night talk shows, the NFL, I mean, Trump hating coming from every angle. And it says here, each cycle of hysteria demands another as the race to the bottom has descended into which celebrity or politician can discover the most provocative or crude Trump expletive. Are we reaching a point in the so far failed resistance where little is left except abject violence in the manner of the Roman or French Revolution? It says the problem for Trump's pop culture foes is not whether to imagine or advocate killing the president. That's a given. They just need to agree on the means of doing so. Kathy Griffin has suggested decapitation. David Crosby, he suggested incineration. And then you have the Shakespeare troupe last year stabbing Trump to death. Snoop Dogg, the rapper, shooting the president. Madonna has suggested exploding or using explosives to destroy the president of the United States. Johnny Depp, he's another Hollywood actor. He opts for a Lincoln-style assassination. And then Kamala Harris, a politician, death by elevator. Others in the university have suggested hanging the president. This is all coming from celebrities, politicians. The media doesn't really think there's anything serious or dangerous even about this. See, there was a roundtable. Well, not a roundtable, I guess, but an interview. Variety spoke with, I think they were three White House correspondents. Jim Acosta, he's the one that goes back and forth with the White House press spokeswoman. And April Ryan, she's had her bouts as well. Ashley Parker of the Washington Post. And they're interviewed here in this interview with Variety to discuss just how difficult it is covering the Trump White House. I mean, it's a real trial for them. This is Jim Acosta voicing his concern, clip 5.
But the problem is that people around the country don't know it's an act. They're not in on the act. And they take what he says very seriously. And they take attacks from Sean Spicer and Sarah Sanders and what they do to us on a daily basis very seriously. They don't have all their faculties in some cases. Their elevator might not hit all floors.
That's him talking about the voters. You'll recall Macron, he comes to the United States and says, "Here, look, I'm here to deal with the president of the United States and the people who elected him." This particular reporter from CNN, he says the people that elected him, they don't have all their faculties in some cases. They don't know that Trump is an act. They're not in on the act. But they're, I mean, if he's mentally unstable, then surely the 60-some-odd million who voted for him, they're in the same condition. Their elevator may not hit all floors, if you know what I mean. That's Jim Acosta. He's a White House correspondent, a White House reporter. He goes further and says this. This is clip five.
My concern is that a journalist is going to be hurt one of these days. Somebody's going to get hurt. And at that point, you know, the White House, the President of the United States, they're going to have to take a hard look in the mirror and ask themselves whether or not they played a role in this, whether they created this toxic environment that resulted in a journalist getting hurt. And
his concern is about journalists getting hurt, if you can believe it. I mean, this is astounding. Like I said, it's mental derangement. Here over the past 16 months, we've been hearing from people right and left, celebrities, politicians, even members of the media, Hollywood, wherever, with all of these images, in some cases, like the Kathy Griffin decapitation, but seriously, incineration, stabbing, shooting, hanging, explosives. And he's concerned, this sanctimonious reporter at CNN, he's concerned about journalists, of all things. One final snippet from his exchange with Variety, clip six.
The moment that a journalist gets hurt in the United States of America because of rhetoric coming from the President of the United States, we have suddenly become something less than the United States. We are starting to join at that moment a different group of countries around the world where the press is not safe.
Well, that's what his concern is. And look, the president can dish it out, and he certainly has called them fake news, or said that's a stupid question. It's just, it's ready to explode, and that's what Victor Davis Hanson talks about toward the end of his article. This resistance and where it's leading, even though there are some positive things happening to the United States, saving America from the radical left, temporarily. I mean, temporarily, there's been some positive developments. But this resistance, this movement, this revolution, where is it leading us? Hanson talks about how hysterical the press was in 2005, 6, and 7. Where they were also imagining the assassination of George W. Bush, comparing him to Hitler and so on. I mean, this is the same tactics they've used previously. It's just that it's at an all-time high, like Jimmy Carter said. It says, though, when Obama came along, picking it up further on in the piece, Bush careerists, including Clapper and Brennan, we're now damning the very counterterrorism practices that they once helped put in place while offering Obama-like politically correct sermons on the benign nature of Islamism. There's a real change that happened during the Obama years. Guys like Clapper and Brennan, they changed their tune and they started swooning. The whole media, all of them, swooning. Obama could do no wrong. Trump can do no right. It says the IRS was weaponized for use against Obama's ideological opponents. Suggestions that the president was unfit or worse became near treasonous. I mean, you couldn't say that during the Obama years. You couldn't say that Obama was mentally unfit or morally unfit. Unity was the new patriotism. That's what we heard. That's what they preached at CNN and elsewhere. I mean, you've got to get behind it. He has a mandate. He got a majority of voters. The assumption was that Obama had ushered in a half century of progressive norms, not that he so alienated the country that he birthed Donald Trump. Donald Trump is America's reaction to Obama in so many ways, to the Obama years. It says, finally, the danger to the country this time around is that the left has so destroyed the old protocols of the opposition party that it will be hard to resurrect them when progressives return to power. He concludes here, we are entering revolutionary times. The law is no longer equally applied. The media are the ministry of truth. The Democratic Party is a revolutionary force, and it's all getting scary. As I say, it's a sobering message coming from Victor Davis Hanson in his latest, yesterday again in his press conference. I forget which one of them this was, but this was the president basically saying what the Democrats have become. Here's our last clip seven.
The Democrats have become obstructionists. That's all they're good at. They're not good at anything else. They have bad ideas. They have bad politics. The one thing they do is obstruct.
And they do that quite well. And what they especially hate coming from this president is that he says things like that, that he fights back, that he exposes them. We're working on another segment for Monday's program that will bring that out yet again. Full exposure. What they're doing, what they've been up to, what's going on behind the scenes, what happened even before I came into office. Well, it's building, this war. I touched on it on Monday. It's building, as I said earlier, and Hanson even alludes to this in his piece. But what happens? I mean, they've tried everything. They've tried everything, but what happens if we get to the midterm elections in 2018 and, you know, it's not the Democratic sweep that they're all expecting? This is what he says. Insidiously and incrementally, we're in the process of normalizing violence against the elected president of the United States. That's the real worry or concern here. Normalizing violence against a sitting U.S. president. That's what Americans should be worrying about. That's what Jim Acosta should be worrying about. It says, if all this fails to delegitimize Trump, fails to destroy his health, or fails to lead to a 2018 midterm Democratic sweep and subsequent impeachment, expect even greater threats of violence. We're not in the business of predicting elections, but we do know what God says in Ezekiel 4 and 5. And we do know that this is building toward violence. It is building, even more broadly than the United States, it's building toward great tribulation. These threats of violence, and of course a lot of it has resulted in violence when you look at some of the protests early on last year and what continued on through the summer. And it's quieted down some in recent months. But the rhetoric, the threats, continue in any means and every means necessary to bring this president down. It continues, all of it, the hearsay, the leaks, the lies, the lawsuits, the boycotts, impeachment proceedings, or the push to have them, morally unfit, mentally unfit, deranged. It's not over. It's going to continue, which is why you really want to stay tuned to this program and to my father's television show in the United States. He had one over the weekend, by the way, on the religion of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, and how very different America is today compared to those days, compared to those kinds of presidents. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to check out all of our latest headlines at the trumpet.com website, and to get this program or any of our programs posted as podcasts, you can email us too at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.